60 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News
app.
I'm Dave Packer in Gaza City. Explosions as Israel's military says its air force is striking hundreds of targets inside the Gaza Strip in response to Hamas's deadly attack on Israeli neighborhoods. At least 700 people have been killed in Israel and around 2,000 wounded in the attack. Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson Daniel Hagari.
The days ahead will be long and difficult. We have paid a heavy price, but we will restore security to the people of Israel.
In Gaza, Palestinian health officials say several hundred people have been killed by Israeli airstrikes and 2,200 injured. In a statement, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin saying the U.S. is sending a carrier strike group to the eastern Mediterranean to bolster deterrence in the region and will be rapidly providing the Israel Defense Forces with additional equipment and resources, including munitions. This is ABC News. Today marks 2 months since the wildfire on Maui that killed at least 98 people, with West Maui now reopening to tourism. ABC's Alex Stone breaks down the controversy involved in that reopening.
Jeremy De Los Reyes is one of the 7,500 evacuees who lost their homes and have been living in the resorts and now will be populated by tourists. The 48-year resident of Maui is angry, saying there's no reason why visitors should be flying in and staying at resorts expecting the fire victims who work there to serve them drinks and to bring them pool towels.
Who in their right mind would feel that it is okay to go visit a disaster zone?
But many business owners on Maui say 2 months later it is time that Maui survives on tourist money, and to survive, they need tourists to return. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Large businesses in California will have to disclose a wide range of planet-warming emissions under a new law Governor Gavin Newsom signed this weekend. It's the most sweeping mandate of its kind in the nation. Dave Packer, ABC News.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Beck. Wisconsin's population is getting older. The AARP ranks Wisconsin 15th of the nation for long-term care services, but advocates see room for improvement. Mike Mohn reports.
Jim Flaherty with AARP Wisconsin agrees the state has done a better job in some areas, such as increasing the number of aging and disability resource centers. But he says there still isn't enough support to help older residents stay in their homes and receiving care in that setting. He warns that the state is going to have a hard time keeping up.
Wisconsin is getting older as a state, and the need for more home health care workers and facility-trained health care workers is only going to increase.
The national report offers recommendations, including some that have been suggested for years, such as providing more financial support to unpaid family caregivers. Officials say policies like tax credits can help reduce cost burdens. States, counties, and cities also are encouraged to develop their own innovative aging plans that can help communities better manage long-term care needs. And while advocates prefer to help older residents remain in their homes, they say nursing homes continue to grapple with staffing shortages. Flaherty says low wages are a big factor.
Wisconsin could really benefit from some additional resources provided by the state to increase the pay for some of the workers in these facilities. You know, the pay is below level of a lot of other jobs that these folks can take.
The report says in Wisconsin, nursing home wages are more than $1.50 an hour lower than other entry-level jobs. Nationally, more than a half of staff in nursing homes leave their jobs within a year. However, the turnover rate is better in Wisconsin. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. This includes a commitment to news. Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Good morning. The time is 7:06 throughout Wisconsin. It is Up North News Radio. I am Chad Holmes, sitting in early this week for Pat Kreitel. Pat is off on vacation. On Friday of this past week, Todd Alba was the guest host. I will now be in the chair for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then Todd will be back on Thursday and Friday before Pat returns next Monday. So hopefully Pat, who is off in Idaho, I believe, enjoying his vacation, hopefully having a great time. And we'll hold down the fort until then, and very glad I could sit in. And again, I'm Chad Holmes. I'm on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230 out of Wausau. I host a daily show from 8 until 10 a.m. And when I'm done here with Up North News, you can flip on over on the Civic Media app or on the website, bullfallsradio.com. Join me from 8 until 10, as we do have shows throughout the state of Wisconsin as well. And then, of course, we have our statewide shows starting again at 10 o'clock with As Goes Wisconsin. And congratulations to Kristen Bry and her husband, Kristen, last week, Thursday, had a baby girl. Just an outstanding piece of news, Francis. And I know that Kristen was going to be heading home, I believe, on Saturday, and now on maternity leave. So Jane Mantaner will be the host of As Goes Wisconsin from 10 until noon. Then stick around for Town Call from noon until 1. Todd Alba from 1 until 3. Matt Lynn Direct from 3 till 4. Of course, the Devil's Advocates with Crudy and Dom from 4 until 6. And the Maggie Dawn Show from 6 until 7. Brand new studios here in Wausau. So, number one, first time to be able to guest host for Pat. And also here, this is we came in here for the first time in the morning on the show on Thursday. So we're still breaking in. Got a beautiful window. Our studio is right near Washington Street in downtown Wausau. Beautiful start weather-wise. We'll have a chance to get a complete look at the weather forecast around the state of Wisconsin with Jennifer Vuchiski coming up in just a few minutes at 7:15. And then after that, we'll be joined by Kenneth Farmer, as I said, author, an outstanding book. Again, I had Ken on my program a couple of times, one talking about the book and another time talking about the issue of schizophrenia. But we're going to talk about the book because, again, I found it to be a great page-turner titled Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. So after the weather, we'll have Ken Farmer coming in, joined by my producer. And again, it feels like Christmas morning, a producer. And Sam Davison is joining us. And Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
How did the weekend go?
It was all right. Not too bad.
It was weird, as I said in the last segment, having either Packers or Badgers.
Well, yeah, that too. I don't know. I'm not that huge of a sports fan, but I was outside a decent bit, and it was just kind of crazy with how warm it was and seeing the leaves changing. It was nice, though. I'm not complaining.
Absolutely. Good for you. I think, again, I spend a lot of my time doing sports, especially the high school sports. So I still follow the colleges and the pros, and I'm very happy when our teams win. But I think there's a good argument for balance, because it's so easy to get caught up and then sit in front of your television the entire weekend and not get out there and enjoy it, especially the kind of weekend that we have when the weather's still warm. It's not going to last. I mean, we're going to hit a wall here eventually, but to have that balance, to be able to take advantage when the weather is nice. And even today coming in, I mean, just a gorgeous morning early on, very early, I got to say.
I've done this. going to be thinking back to today when you're driving in the middle of winter in a snow-covered road.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I'll be able to turn around here and look out this window and see snow plows going by soon enough. But again, it's great to be with you, and it's great to sit in for Pat and really enjoying it, and hopefully be able to close to fill the shoes of the big man, right?
Yeah, you're doing pretty great so far.
Well, I appreciate that. Real quickly, today is October the 2nd, the first Monday of 2023. Of October 2023, October the 2nd, a few celebrities are celebrating their birthdays today. One, we heard in our bumper last hour before our interview with congressional candidate Kyle Kilborn, we heard a message in a bottle from Sting. Well, and the Police, actually. The Police, and Sting, of course, was the writer of that song and the singer. And Sting is celebrating his birthday today. He is 72 years old. Morning show host Kelly Ripa turning 52 today. Also, Avery Brooks, he was the Captain Sisko on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He also was a co-star on Spencer for Hire. Avery Brooks turning 75 years old today. Some famous events. I'm a big history buff, and I love learning from history. And well, I think one of the more significant days in presidential history was today. On this date in 1919, 104 years ago, President Woodrow Wilson suffered a stroke that left him partially paralyzed. The thing was, he was able to successfully hide that from the American people for the most part for the next year and a half before he left office. Nowadays, never be able to do that, but his wife and his doctors were able to hide the fact that the president had a stroke back in 1919. That occurred on this date as he was going around the country making speeches, trying to get support for the League of Nations. And ultimately, the Senate did not approve United States participation in the League of Nations. Another famous event that occurred on this date in history was in 1950, the comic strip Peanuts by Charles Schulz first published. Yep, that was 73 years ago today. And for me, who's done many, many sports play-by-play broadcast, one of the greats all time, Vin Scully. It was on this date, hard to believe it's been 7 years, but 7 years ago today, Vin Scully broadcast his last Dodgers game after a record 67 seasons. And also on this date in 2017, a sad day in the entertainment world, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers leader, Tom Petty died of cardiac arrest at UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles following an accidental overdose of painkillers for multiple ailments, including a broken hip. That occurred on this date in 2017. We're going to take a quick break, come back, have a weather update with Jennifer Vuchiski, and then talk to Ken Farmer, author from Stevens Point. Coming up, it's Up North News. I'm Chad Holmes, sitting in for Pat Kreitlow on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
David Drake is a professor and the Extension Wildlife Specialist at UW-Madison. Greg, tell him what you call him.
I now refer to you as Jane's birder boyfriend.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Whoa!
Now I have competition.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, God, I am wounded.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, it was Sam's first day flying solo because Aaron said he was going bear hunting. Aaron's not here this morning.
He's
so
not.
It's either Aaron doesn't need to be here or Aaron's been eaten by a bear.
Gosh, I'd sure hope that Aaron hasn't been eaten by a bear.
Well, he's not there. Now I'm just afraid. afraid that if we ring up his phone somewhere out there, Mrs. Bear is going to elbow Mr. Bear and go, is your tummy rumbling?
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Me try to get out of bed at 4:30 in the morning. Oh, yeah. Bones don't move as quick as they used to. Welcome back to Civic Media This Morning with Sam and Todd. I'm Todd, he's Sam on the board. Pat Kreitlow is, I mean, he might be up north. He went out west, actually. It was up west news or out west news with Pat Kreitlow.
if you're talking latitude wise, yeah, probably.
Yeah, right. No, Pat's a little vacation. He'll be back on Monday. Glad to fill in the usual segments of Up North News Radio. We'll return next week. Happy to be back here with you on a Friday, the 6th of October, 2023, 16 now past the hour of 6 o'clock. Let's take a look at your temperatures across the state of Wisconsin this morning. Up there on beautiful Lake Wissota, where this program normally originates from, it is a balmy 46 degrees and partly cloudy skies a little further north. Up around Ashland this morning, 48 degrees and cloudy. Over in Amory, looks like it's 46 degrees and cloudy. Wausau this morning, 46 and cloudy. Green Bay right now, 48 and clear skies. Eau Claire this morning, 46 and clear. La Crosse this morning, 40, make it 52 and mostly clear. Richland Center this morning, 46 and clear skies. Here in the capital city of Madison, 48 and clear. Oshkosh in the Fox Valley, 48 and clear skies. Waukesha, 45 and clear. And closer to the lake, beautiful city of Milwaukee, 50 degrees and clear skies. It's going to be a pretty nice day for people on the western side of the state. Our Amory, Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, La Crosse, Richland Center listeners, they may get some showers coming in late this, well, more like early afternoon, maybe around noon or so. And then those showers will continue to spread towards the Madison area. The homecoming parade this afternoon around 5 may get a little damp. If you're listening here in Madison, make sure you take a rain jacket along, because could be some fairly decent rain showers, not a storm, but showers. Those will dissipate as the parade goes on. And then for those of you wondering about Friday night football, it looks like most of those high school games should be able to be played. Doesn't look like a lot of thunderstorms or lightning activity, so hopefully no games will have to be delayed. But again, take a rain jacket or umbrella where it is allowed. Certainly some galoshes, as my grandpa used to say, rubbers. He used to call his
interesting choice.
I know that was the term back in the whatever the 40s and the 50s when they'd wear dress shoes, of course, to work, and then they'd have the galoshes with or rubber galoshes. So
you wear over top your dress shoes.
He'd ask my grandma, "Where do my rubbers go?" That's a true story. We always get a chuckle out of that. Well, that's what they're called, he say. Anyway, make sure you take your rubbers and your galoshes, whatever you need to keep yourself dry and protected tonight at Friday Night Football across the state of Wisconsin. And again, it'll kind of go from west to east today. And earlier in the afternoon, our western listeners, then central Wisconsin and southern Wisconsin, around 4 or 5 o'clock. And then perhaps some more storms, at least significant showers later on tonight. All that's going to move out overnight. And by tomorrow, your Saturday, looks like a pretty darn nice day on your Saturday homecoming day here in Madison, Wisconsin. Around 54 degrees for a high, so we'll be chilly. Make sure you put on an extra sweater. Most of us are not used to the cooler temperatures, but I think a lot of people are ready for it. I mean, I love the summer. But fall is my favorite time of year, and now it actually is starting to feel a little bit like fall out there, so a beautiful time. Make sure you dress warmly tomorrow if you're going to be out and about, but go out and enjoy the apple orchards or what have you tomorrow. Take a look at the Wisconsin DOT cams and reports around the state as far as driving conditions this morning. It looks like everything is an on-time morning for back to school this morning, getting the kids there on a Friday. And also the end of your work week, at least the end for most people. I know there are a lot of people that also work over the holiday or over the weekend. The only traffic incident right now in the entire state of Wisconsin, at least being reported right now, is down near our Kenosha and Racine listeners on I-4194 North, 0.4 of a mile beyond the ramp from Wisconsin 165. Three lanes are blocked due to a crash, and that was last updated about 20 minutes ago. Looking at the camera there, it is not pretty as far as trying to get through that area. Lots of traffic backed up. So if you're in the Racine, Kenosha area this morning on I-4194 North, about 0.4 of a mile beyond the ramp from Wisconsin 163, allow some extra time or find an alternate route. If you're going to be on I-4194 northbound near Racine, Kenosha this morning, it is not an on-time morning there. For the rest of the state, though, however, it looks like everything is going well. Again, there may be an accident where you're at, but nothing being reported by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Top news story of the day still remains that story from yesterday. I think a lot of us were shocked it broke overnight or broke late in the morning, early afternoon yesterday. According to several reports, among them CNN, this is a national story now, a man who was arrested on Wednesday after bringing a handgun to the Wisconsin Capitol and saying he wanted to see Governor Tony Evers returned with an assault rifle later that night after posting bail, according to the Wisconsin Department of Administration. The man was shirtless and had a holstered gun, a handgun, and a leashed dog when he approached the security desk outside the governor's office in Madison around 2 p.m. on Wednesday. He said he would not leave until he saw the governor, who happens to be a Democrat. The man was taken into custody without incident by a Capitol police officer and taken to the Dane County Jail for openly carrying a firearm in the Capitol, which, of course, is illegal. The gun was seized as evidence, and the dog was turned over to the city of Madison Animal Control. Now, here's the thing. The man later posted bail himself to get out of jail, and he returned to the outside of the Capitol at 9 p.m., this time with a loaded AK-47-style rifle, again asking to see the governor. In a statement, they said Capitol Police and the City of Madison Police Department officers began a dialogue with the person. A consent search of his backpack was conducted and revealed a collapsible police-style baton, which is illegal, as the man does not have a valid concealed carry permit. Officers took the man into custody again shortly before midnight for psychiatric evaluation based on, quote, concerning statements, and the rifle was seized by Capitol Police. A spokesman for the governor's office declined comment, saying that they don't comment on policies of the governor's security. Evers, however, told reporters yesterday he was doing okay and crediting various police departments for their work. Here's what the governor said, quote, yeah, it's always something that, you know, you don't want to see happen, he said, but that's why we have good people in the police departments, in the Capitol Police and the State Patrol. They're doing great work. Unquote. Asked if the Capitol's security policies would be enhanced, the governor said, quote, I'm sure they're looking into that as we speak, unquote, though he also declined to discuss security matters in detail. This is a scary thing. And we talked about it on our regular show in the afternoon from 1 until 3. Make sure you join us this afternoon with updated news stories. Going to have Brady Ewing on, by the way, who is a former Wisconsin captain of the football team, went to 3 Rose Bowls, a 3-time Big Ten champion, and also played in the NFL. Brady Ewing this afternoon on our show from 1 until 3. But getting back to this story, top news story, for those who might not know, I worked in the Capitol like Pat Kreitlow did. Pat was a state senator. I worked for a state senator for a number of years. And so I'm very familiar with the security process, and I talked about this yesterday afternoon. That one of the great things about our Wisconsin Capitol is that there isn't security, that anyone can walk in at any time. There are multiple doors. You can walk in. If you've never been to Madison, if you've never been to the state capitol, do it, please. Because it's one of the most beautiful buildings, I would say, in America. And one of the great things that you can just walk in. I've been working, I worked there starting in 1992, interned there. And the only two times that metal detectors were put in place was after 9/11 for about a year. And then also during the Act 10 fiasco of Scott Walker in 2011. It turned out that Walker was afraid of teachers. But it was, I'll tell you, working there at those times, it was terrible. Because you have all these fourth grade classes that come there for their school trips. And you can't just say, well, we're going to screen the adults, but not the kids. You got to screen everybody. So there'd be these huge lines. Because most of the doors, there were only a couple of doorways that were open to the public. Those had to be, you know, go through metal detectors and screeners. It just made the entire building feel different. I also worked in Congress for a former member of Congress in D.C. and Madison. So I'm familiar what it's like. I mean, the U.S. Capitol, unless you're going on a tour, you can't just walk in. It's locked down. Well, unless you have an insurrection, but that's a whole other bottle of wine or a cup of coffee. But also the House and Senate office buildings have metal detectors and security as well. It just feels very different. And so one of the great things about the Wisconsin State Capitol is that it is open. It represents free and open government, free and open democracy. The fact that any citizen can walk in at any time and go see your legislator and say, you know what? I don't like what you're doing. Or you know what? Good job. It's literally, it's an open door policy for citizens of the state to be able to go into your and see your representative. Now, the governor's office is on what they call the first floor. Because where you walk into the Capitol is called the ground floor. So it's actually, well, most of us would consider it, you know, the second floor, but it's called first floor. So the fact that this guy had to go in, he had a dog with him apparently, shirtless, with a loaded handgun, and went up to the governor's office. There is one, usually one, sometimes two police, Capitol police officers who are armed at a desk there. Before you go into the governor's office, to the right and to the left, it's the state attorney general's official office. And then straight ahead is the governor's conference room. You know, and the fact that maybe they change that area of the Capitol. Maybe they add more security there. I don't know. We'll see. But it gets more to the point, in my opinion, of gun control laws and mental health issues. And look, I'm a hunter, all right? I'm a hunter. I have firearms. I believe that people should be able to have firearms to hunt. But also as a hunter, I don't know any hunter worth their salt who says I need an AK-47 or an AR-15 to kill something, to eat. You're a pretty bad shot if that's the case, quite frankly. And this ongoing narrative, predominantly by the Republican Party leadership, not the members, the leader, not all members, but leadership, this narrative of violence. And it comes from the top. Trump just saying it right out, calling for violence against elected officials. And here we almost, God forbid, had it happen in the state of Wisconsin. The governor, by the way, was not in the Capitol at the time. Well done, Capitol Police. Well done, State Patrol. What do you think? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Back with more after this. This is Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Ready Network. House!
From the heart of the St. Croix Valley, we're in touch with you. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. It's war. Israel promising a punishing retaliation after attacks by Hamas that Israel says left more than 700 people dead and thousands injured. Israel's UN ambassador Gilad Erden at the United Nations today.
Israel will exact a heavy price on Hamas so that what we witnessed will never repeat itself.
Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson Daniel Hagari accused Hamas of being more brutal than ISIS.
Israeli intelligence indicates that Hamas are hiding among Gazan civilians inside Gazan homes and schools, hospitals and mosques.
Meanwhile, the Palestinian Health Ministry says more than 300 are dead on the Gaza side. Here at home, Massachusetts Senator Ed Markley calling for de-escalation and diplomacy.
We need a two-state solution, and those kinds of discussions should immediately commence, but only after we've ended this conflict.
This is ABC News.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanction lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25. 5 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Do you support the legalization, regulation, and taxation of legal cannabis in the state of Wisconsin? You said yes! Melissa, that was like 12 years ago! What do you think the hang-up is?
It's the Republicans. They're suffering from reefer madness. They're out-of-touch legislators in the Capitol building who don't want to give a win to Governor Evers and Democrats.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Well, he had a little chat with management yesterday, and I did suggest a daily limo and a fruit plate.
How'd they take that?
That didn't seem to take that seriously for some reason.
I have full faith in you. You've been doing this for a long time. And you have Greg Bach.
I got a call from management this morning saying if I'd be interested in taking on new roles as a driver and buying fruit plates. That's a career opportunity.
Put that on your resume, baby.
Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughter have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
On the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Chad Holmes, sitting in today for Pat Kreitlow. Pat is on vacation. We are talking to author Kenneth Farmer. He is from Stevens Point, and he has a new book out titled Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. We talked again about some of the denial, some of the early signs real quickly as well. I think something about this book that I think connects with people around here is you make Central Wisconsin part of the story, that when you moved up here, you talk about what it was like growing up, you know, in the midst of the 60s and the Packers and your heroes. And you know, you mentioned some places in Stevens Point that, you know, either went to school or part of the area. That Stevens Point is part of this story as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mainly grew up in Stevens Point. We lived in Kentucky for a while till I was about seven, and we came up here. And I went through the school system. I graduated from Spash. And my brother went through the school system here. My brother ultimately ended up dying in a group home in Wausau, died in Wausau Hospital. When it was Wausau Hospital, I think it's Aspirus now.
Right.
He was in a group home on Washington Street, I think, in Washington,
right outside our window.
Yeah, exactly. That's where he was. And actually, he functioned the best when he was in that group home.
That's something I want to talk about as we get towards the end of the story. But we kind of started where you saw some issues early on. At what point did it start to get violent, or did you know that it was getting violent? Because I know that there were times where when you went away to school, you didn't realize that there was some violence from your brother towards your mother that we'll discuss as well. But where did it go from maybe eccentric, as you said, with these ideas of trying to, you know, make $1 million in Florida, to it got serious in terms of the violence?
He started having serious paranoid type problems with my mother. He thought that she was out to get him. And I remember the first episode, he started screaming at her out of the blue about something and then tried to light something on fire. I think it was an application to college. It was when he was 17, and tried to light some of the cupboards up in the kitchen. And we called the police and nothing happened. And then it really got violent, and I was there, because I don't know what he would have done to her to keep him off of her. And then at the dinner table in the middle of that summer, he, out of the blue, he called my mother something like a bitch or something. And my father, of course, exploded. And then I had to keep them apart. And he started screaming, "She's the one. She's the one. You know, put her in a mental hospital. She needs to be in a mental hospital." You know, and maybe so, you know, she did have some mental health issues, but he was completely out of control. And I got into a physical altercation where I, myself, my father, were, you know, all in, myself and my brother were all in one threesome. Mm-hmm. Tang, you know, going down the stairs, falling down the stairs. My brother's trying to hit my father. My father's trying to hit him. It was just awful. And, you know, then it was sort of one incident after another like that. Sometimes he would try to choke my mother when I wasn't there. My father would intercede. And it just kept going on that way, and it got worse and worse. And then there came a point where He came home one evening and said, "We needed to get out of the house." It was the middle of the night. And he had by then beaten my mother and father up so many times I can't even count. And he said, "We had to get out of there." And he started crying and screaming that an organization called the Black Mafia was out to kill him and kill our family, and that they were coming. And then we really knew that he had really slipped over. This wasn't youthful rebellion or any of this. This was seriously a serious mental illness. And I got him out of the house, and he came back in the house. And he was wielding a tennis racket he found in the garage at my mother. And I was able to get the tennis racket away from him and basically drag him out of the house. And I was able to get that done, and we slept in a hotel that night. And that's when we did our first commitment petition.
Denial, denial, denial. Because again, right. You know, we get to that point where you decide that it's commitment. And you mentioned that you lost count of the physical altercations. Oh. And still, right. You got to the point, and it was you that was probably the leader in terms of saying, he, right. Lee, needs to be committed. And yet, despite the physical beatings that your mother took, she, for her entire life, refused to sign or be part of any commitment exercises. Was it you that ultimately decided that Lee needed to be committed? And yes. You talk about how difficult that was, because it was not easy, was it?
I knew I would lose my brother. I would not only lose my brother, I would lose my mother. That was extremely hard for me. But I just got to the point where, you know, I had to do something. I couldn't be there all the time to stop things.
Real quickly, how old were you at this time?
19. And I was a sophomore in college at UWSP. And so I met with, under the encouragement of a professor of mine, I met with my family. And my mother refused to sign the petition. Said over my dead body, I'm not doing that. And so we had to have three petitioners to get a commitment proceeding started. And we only had myself and my father. And so we had one of my father's colleagues sign a petition because my mother refused to do it. I don't know if it was out of guilt, or I think more of it was shame by her. And shame and blame kind of go together. And she was blaming herself perhaps for this. And she just wouldn't do it. And so that was our first commitment proceeding, and it ended up in an agreement, which should never have happened. We agreed to 10 days for him in a mental hospital in Madison, and the doctor down there had us meet as a family, and my brother lost it in the hospital, and they took him away. And the psychiatrist said, look, this 10-day agreement is crazy. It's going to take longer than this to get him on medication. He's not going to be supervised once he gets out, because you gave up the opportunity for a commitment when you had the chance. You know, he had to, and this would never have happened today. They would have gone ahead with the commitment under those circumstances. And so then he gets out, and naturally what happens is he decompensates eventually over a number of months, and he goes to a rooming house in Stevens Point. Right across the street from Boston Funeral Home there. Mm-hmm. And I went to visit him one day, and the door was partially open. He wasn't there, and I could see through the partially open door a shotgun. My brother, who never hunted in his life, never had any interest in firearms in his life, now had purchased a shotgun from a store called The Sports Shop in downtown Stevens Point. And I got the shells. I didn't want to carry a shotgun down the street, but I got the shells.
Right.
And, you know, there was a note on the floor, or some writings of my brother, and it said, the writings in his handwriting said, I live in the death house, conveniently located across the street from my funeral parlor. You know, and really what I was seeing at that point was, we see it all the time now, of mass shootings and things like that. That was the beginning of something like that with him. And so I knew I had to do something. I got the shells, got out of there. I took the piece of paper with me and the receipt for the gun that was on the floor too. Told my dad, and we initiated the second time, another petition. And this time we finally got him committed, but it wasn't without a struggle, because the law required, and it still requires to this day, that you have a recent overt act or threat of violence. If you're going the direction of harmful or a threat to others, which we were, you had to have a recent one. And they said that that wasn't the case, because my brother never threatened anybody with the gun. He never pointed it at the gun. Yet it was very obvious that he was extremely dangerous, and it was like they weren't going to be able to do anything. So the night before the jury trial, the social worker called me on the phone, and she says, guess what? I said, what? Says, you don't have to worry about the overt act. Your brother assaulted a nurse at Norwood up in Marshfield. That nurse quit her job because of my brother. And she testified at the jury trial. It was an awful, awful situation. They keep you in a jury trial if you haven't testified yet, away from other witnesses. And we were in this conference room. She was in there with her husband, and I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if to apologize for my brother or what. It was awful.
We're talking to Ken Farmer, again, the author of Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia, Stevens Point author. Glad to have him here on Civic Media. That kind of brings up a point about the dynamic within the family, about your role. Because you're being put in a situation here where you're almost the head of the household, in a sense. Yeah. And that's part of it. And also part of the story is where there's a point where you actually get frustrated because you're doing all the, and it's something we haven't really got into yet, but you did all the right things in terms of being able to be successful in the classroom, be able to go to law school. And at a certain point, you got frustrated that everything is being focused on Lee, while you, the good son, feels like you're not getting, I guess, the proper love. But talk a little about the role within your family, both in terms of where ultimately you're making these incredibly life-changing decisions for your family, and then at the same time, you feel like, hey, I'm not being appreciated within my family unit.
That is a definite dynamic that occurs in many families involving schizophrenia. I was reading a book about that, the dynamics of this, and I was shocked at all the things that happened in our family.
You're talking about you, right?
They were talking about me. And one of them is exactly what you've said, that siblings become angry because the resources, both in terms of money and in terms of, you know, emotional attention or whatever, being directed towards the person who's schizophrenic. And the other dynamic of that, so there's anger. That's a common thing among siblings. Another thing is the sibling who isn't schizophrenic tends to try to overachieve,
right,
to compensate for the schizophrenic child. Because they don't want their parents to feel like they're failures, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but there's that's sort of a family hero syndrome. Mm-hmm. It occurs in families of alcoholics. It occurs in any dysfunctional family. And so, but, you know, there's a good and a bad side to that. By trying to be family hero, perhaps I achieved in ways that I wouldn't have otherwise. I went to law school. Got on the law review, had good grades in law school, and really worked hard. And so that was a good thing, a good thing, you know, that perhaps I never would have done otherwise because of that family dynamics. But there are many other things like that that occur in families of schizophrenics.
Kind of quickly, we got about a minute, a little more than a minute to go in this segment, and then we'll come back with one more segment. But something that I thought a real touching story is after you had a blow up with your parents about that issue about, you know, again, I'm doing everything great, and you found souvenirs that your mother had kept from the scouts, and you again thought about how she, who needed to basically, she had no use of one of her arms, how she was able to put together the badges.
Yeah. My mother had she could sew with one arm.
Mm-hmm.
She used her mouth to help thread the needle. Okay. Mm-hmm. She sewed on every one of my 22 merit badges for my Eagle Scout. And it would take her, you know, an hour or two to sew on one merit badge because she had to do it with one hand. She sewed on all of my badges. They didn't have these stick-on kind of badges like they do now, where you put an iron on it. No, they had to be sewn on, and she did all that for me. And she, with one hand, clipped out every time I was in the paper for something, whether it was speech or debate or National Honor Society, whatever. She would clip out every one of those with one hand.
We'll come back after a break, more with Ken Farmer, author of Lee, and we'll talk about, again, a very interesting book. And you're up north. I'm Chad Holmes, in for Pat Kreitlow of the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanction lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Time out!
Oh, right! Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
It's Up for the News with Pat Kreitlow at Away This Week. I'm Chad Holmes, and I work at Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. I have a daily show from 8 until 10 a.m., so once we're done here in this final segment, if you want to flip on over, if you're listening on other stations around the state, BullFallsRadio.com, also the Civic Media app by going to the Bull Falls Radio page. Hope you can join me from 8 until 10 a.m. or just keep it on your station. I'm sure it'll be outstanding programming as well. We're talking to author Ken Farmer, Stevens Point, author of a new book, Lee, The Tragic Story of a Family Broken by Schizophrenia. And one word that came into my mind when I was reading the book was denial. Another word is shame, because during the course of your life, you had significant events that occurred, graduations from law school and college and high school. And also when you would see somebody you would not want to introduce to your family, the word shame, that you didn't have your family involved in some of these parts of your life. And that's something that's also very common in this situation, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly shame is. And yeah, that was a problem for me. I don't think I did well in terms of relationships with the opposite sex that much. I never really wanted to get married or have children because I didn't know if they turned out to be schizophrenic. I didn't want to tell them about my family. And so that hurt my relationships with them, because If you're serious about somebody, generally speaking, you introduce them to your family. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that, and I would lose relationships because of that. There were a lot of problems like that for me. I actually went into therapy over it, and you know, the therapist said, "Well, you're just camping out all the time." That's how he put it, and it was so true of me. And so it made it very difficult for me to formulate serious intimate relationships, because I didn't want to have another replay of what happened. So there were some things like that. I think also he didn't come to, and maybe that's my fault, I still feel guilty, but to any of my graduations. He never came to my Eagle Scout ceremony. He was gone. Sometimes it was because he wasn't around. We didn't know where he was. And but it was in my mind just as well. I don't know how I could have dealt with him at the same time deal with. Ultimately, he didn't even come to my own wedding when I finally did get married.
There's so much within this book that we don't have time to go into, because we basically talked about, I think, the early part of the life up until you were able to get him committed. But there was a lot of life after that, a lot of years after that. I guess, how would you say that after you got to that point where you and your father ultimately were finally able to commit him, over the years, was there ever, in terms of medication, in terms of being able to live a life for your brother, how would you describe those years as an adult? Because as you mentioned, he ended up here in Wausau at a group home where he died. What were the years as an adult like?
Well, eventually my brother wasn't as violent or as delusional with time. What happens with schizophrenia, the typical course of it is in the initial stages, there are outward symptoms such as delusions and hallucinations. He got on some medication, on and off on medication, but he mellowed out some, but he still had what are called negative symptoms rather than outward symptoms, internal ones, where he couldn't interact with other people at all. Mm-hmm. He couldn't take care of himself. Lack of self-care is a big thing in schizophrenia. So he had to constantly be monitored. And he got better to the extent that he wasn't violent or as delusional. He was still at times. But he didn't have those kinds of serious symptoms, but he still had the other symptoms. He still needed to be taken care of. And as a result of that, I don't believe he ever got better completely at all. And that's not the case with all schizophrenics, but to a certain extent with him, his disease could only be managed. It couldn't be cured.
Mm-hmm. What about the relationship with your parents as the years went on? Because as I said, I think the first time that we talked at the start of the book, your father was not the hero. He was the villain of the story.
Right.
I mean, because of his violence.
Right.
And I would say that for your mother, with her issues as well, was difficult. I thought as the story went on that that your father looked better and better because of obviously the stories you were able to find out about what happened to your mother before they'd even met. How would you describe the relationship between you and your parents as the years went on?
Well, as you mentioned, with my father, he and I had something in common now more, and he and I worked together. We were a team that tried to deal with my brother because my mother didn't want to deal with it. And so that was a good
2 times the healthy blood pressure support. That's a number to rave about. Thanks to Superbeats Heart Chew's unique 2X ingredient that helps promote normal blood pressure nearly 2 times more effectively than diet and exercise alone. Superbeats is America's number one selling beet brand, and the only number one cardiologist, doctor, and pharmacist recommended beet brand for heart health support. A clinical study showed that the key ingredient in Superbeats Heart Chews is nearly 2 times more effective at supporting normal blood pressure than a healthy lifestyle alone. And they're part of a brand with over 60,000 five-star ratings and reviews. So double your potential with a special offer exclusively for radio listeners. Get a free 30-day supply of Superbeats Heart Chews and 15% off your first order at GetSuperBeats.com with code RADIO. That's a free 30-day supply and 15% off for radio listeners only at GetSuperBeats.com, code RADIO.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
ABC News.